Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast with your host, Adam Emmert.
I don't know about this pseudo real fake grass.
And Brandon Schultz.
This should be unanimous. The robocalls are out of control.
Go Hawks!
On a quest to own the West. This is episode 222 of the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy, Adam Emmer.
My man, Brandon Schultz, how are you, bud?
Dude, I am fired up. It is, by the time this launches, Adam, you are going to be just packing your bags, getting on the road, picking me up in Kalispell, and we're heading to Canada to catch our flight to London.
Absolutely. I have not been outside of the U.S. since I was probably, I don't know, 10, and I'll see Canada and England all in one trip.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
You live within an hour and a half of the border, and you haven't crossed it since you were 10 years old.
So back when I was 10 years old, guess what? You didn't need to go to Canada.
Yeah, a passport or
correct. Kind of, right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, then they changed that rule, and then I just didn't go. But now I have a passport. This trip has forced me to get a passport. That's good in case I ever need to escape the country. Because if the Rams continue to win games and go undefeated, I may have to escape the country. But I don't think that's going to happen.
We do have some thoughts on the Rams, of course, with the Seahawks taking the 33-31 loss this week. And we're going to talk about where to place the blame, coaching versus execution. More positivity about the offensive line in the show. And with the Oakland game coming up, you can find out. You can come hang out with us if you want. And we're going to tell you how to do that a little later on in the show.
I am so stoked to meet so many of you listeners, you little flockers, people that have been on my radar for a long time. It's going to be an absolute blast. Can't wait.
Well, let's get into the game with the Rams. We got some of Clinton's thoughts in the post-game reaction show, and we're waiting. I'm sure there's so many of our listeners, Adam, who are waiting to hear from you in this game. And I think our mantra of winning is better than losing, I think that was tested a little bit this week, because after the win against the Arizona Cardinals and after the loss to the Los Angeles Rams, I feel distinctly different ways. In either case, is winning better than losing?
Well, yes, because if we would have won against the Rams, that would have been better than losing. Still.
So, and if we would have lost to the Cardinals, it would have been worse than winning.
Yeah, even though opposite world feels like it's in full effect this last 2 weeks, because yes, I think we all felt far more down about the team after the Arizona Cardinals game. And I don't know, I haven't listened to you and Clinton's post-game show or any national stuff. I haven't listened to crap what anybody had to say about this game, because I wanted to keep my own opinion about this to bring to you guys without it being really skewed by anybody else. But let's first, I want to thank Clinton for coming on and filling in the post-game show for me. The man, the myth, the legend, creator of 3 and 3 Out. If you haven't been watching those amazing vlogs on the Seahawkers Podcast YouTube channel, then you're missing out. So go check that out. Check out what Clinton does. It's amazing. But I don't know about you, Brandon, but this is the game that I watched, and at the end of it, I was like, we're back.
Really? Okay, because yeah. some of our listeners didn't feel quite the same way. Michael in San Diego says moral victories don't feel as good as catfish. He wins. And I don't know if I agree with that. I think losing by 2 to the Rams, there's a lot of positive things to take away. Whereas in that win against the Cardinals, it had me feeling a little bit more down. But because we did take the loss, I think it's important to get out of the way real quick here. The reason why we lost, and it wasn't the Seahawks, it wasn't execution, it wasn't coaching. It was Angela Koski-Earle. Who says, well,
yeah, she knows what she did.
Let me just simultaneously answer the last question for you and take full responsibility for this loss. It's 4th and 1, and the punt unit comes out right after I had turned to my family and said, yeah, he'll go for it on 4th and 1. Why the hell wouldn't you? Then what the hell? Why aren't they going for it? They'll make one freaking yard. We would go for it. And then, my Hawker comes crashing down around me. My thoughts were sent instantaneously to Rams
catfish
head. And lo and behold, a change was made and the offense came out So I'm sorry. I thought my Hawker was in alignment, and obviously it was not.
Yeah, you got to be careful what you speak into reality, right? There's that thing where you, if you say something, it manifests itself in the real world, and
you can jinx it.
Yeah, this is what happened here.
You know, as much as we might celebrate the fact that the Seahawks finally look like they are finding their identity on offense, they didn't do what Pete Carroll always preaches in games like this, and that's to finish. Because the Seahawks, they had the lead going into the fourth quarter. They were up in the game, had the lead at home in the fourth quarter, and they couldn't finish. And there were three plays that I think this game hinged on in the fourth quarter. You had the fourth and two. You got the Rams. You stopped them on third down inside the 10-yard line. They decide to go for it on fourth and down. They pass it out to the outside, and Shaquille Griffin comes in with a pass interference. They end up scoring on the next play, and fortunately, they miss the extra point, but then it's still, they have the lead. It's 31-30. The Seahawks stall out. There was a pass to Vinette, and I don't know if I include this as one of the three plays, because Peters made a really good play ahead of Vinette to tip the pass up. He couldn't come down with it. They end up stalling out on that drive. The Rams get the ball back, drive down for a field goal. But then the Seahawks, they respond. And they have a deep pass to Tyler Lockett, 44 yards down the middle. And then we see it all unravel. And Dave Bloomquist points this out. First and 10 at the 32 with 4.5 minutes left. They false start.
No, they go, not they. A Fetty false starts.
The clock was down to zero. They still had two timeouts at that point.
I know.
That could have been a place where you take a timeout before the clock hits zero.
Really? But, no way.
But a Fetty false starts. Then there's a 2-yard run with a holding penalty. Holding penalty on Fluker. Then incomplete pass that's batted away. And then an incomplete pass where there's a scramble and a throwaway. And Dave points out that, my friend, is a lack of execution with the game on the line.
The false start was the most brutal, just because that automatically now pushes you back, and everybody and their dog knows you're throwing the ball at this point, even though they did try to run it and, you know, gained a whopping two. But the holding call on Fluker was legit. I know Fluker didn't like it. I know Pete Carroll didn't like it, but that's a hold, and that needs to be called.
And I think the reason why Pete was so upset about it, it wasn't that it was called necessarily. It's that it wasn't called consistently throughout the game. And the decision to call it there seemed, you know, questionable.
Yeah, good luck calling a holding consistently throughout the game. I mean, the old adage is that you can call holding on any play throughout a game. Which is true.
Regilin James says, after watching the DVR recording, I think Adam's onto something. With the NFL helping the Rams out in that game. That holding call was bullshit.
Catfish! So, look, I understand the sentiment, and the timing of it was especially brutal. And it really is a bummer that that was on Fluker, considering how well he played throughout this game. He's a difference maker on that offensive line, man. I am so excited to have him out there playing guard. It's really helped Fetty for the most part. He still can, you know, reel off a terrible penalty at the worst possible time. We saw it in this game, but we did see the offense throughout the game be able to run the ball on quote unquote the best defense in all of football, with the guys Sue and Donald up front, people who are unmovable, right?
Yeah,
they, you cannot run the football on them. I watched the Vikings try to run on them, couldn't get squat done, and we jellied it down their throats. That right there, that was the moment where I was like, holy crap, we've actually got something here. Because this is the third week in a row that they've actually been able to run the football and run it really, really well. Once is a coincidence, twice is a trend, three times is a you problem. In this case, three times is a you success. This is great. And it makes all the difference in the world with Russell Wilson in the passing game. My only critique of the running game would be, I want to see Russell keep it more. I know that there are people saying that he has a hamstring injury that has not been confirmed, but he's still able to run around enough. And if we just let him keep it a few times on some of these read option looks, just make the defense respect it just a little bit more, that run game, when he does hand it off to Carson or Davis, would be even more explosive. So that's something I would like to see and didn't see. But you talked about three plays that were kind of the difference in the game. I feel like this was one of those games that you weren't going to win because you're going to need the ball to bounce your way a few times. And boy, howdy, did the ball just bounce the Rams' way throughout the entire game, starting with Frank Clark's strip sack of Jared Goff that bounces directly back into his hands.
Goff waits the snap, a four-man rush. Goff steps up, ball is slapped away. Goff picks it up, flag is down, throw is dropped out near the 50-yard line. Frank Clark was coming. He got a hand on that pass.
There is no foul in play. Fourth down.
It is a fourth down, a three and out. Only the third time all season, and Frank Clark was a man who was not going to be denied.
There was a strip sack later in the game in which the ball bounced right underneath an offensive lineman. They were able to recover. There was a pass, I believe, in the second quarter where he went for one of the wide receivers, Goff did, bounces off the receiver, and Tyler Higbee, the tight end,
just catches it.
Right. These are the things. These are the little things that, like, you understood the football gods were just against you a little bit.
Yeah, they did have a couple turnovers in this game. Let's talk a little bit about the strip sack that wasn't a sack, because I found out something interesting. If the quarterback fumbles the ball, like Frank Clark knocked it out of his mm-hmm. hands, if the quarterback's able to pick it back up and attempt a pass, it's not a sack.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
That's why you look in the box score.
Yeah.
Jared Goff only sacked one time, and it doesn't have any Seahawks player listed as having a sack. Although I think they did give one to Quentin Jefferson, because if you remember the moment where Jared Goff steps up in the pocket and he just loses the football out of his hand.
Yeah.
That was the one sack that counted.
Interesting. Well, you break out the NBC, the more you know music, right?
Because if you can attempt a pass after fumbling it and recovering it, then it's not a sack.
I didn't know. Thank you for the public service announcement.
Yes, you bet.
That's great, Brandon.
Well, you didn't let me finish my three plays because...
I thought we did. I'm sorry. No, jeez.
Well, I confused things a little bit. That's my fault.
Well, I'm confused now then. Are you guys confused? Nod right now if you're confused too.
Nod right now if you're confused. No, the third play that in the fourth quarter that the game hinged on was that fourth and inches where the Rams decided to go for it and couldn't get the stop, because they did stop him on third down. Tedrick Thompson came in the hole and absolutely hammered Todd Gurley in the hole to keep him from getting the first down. And all you have to do in that situation on fourth and inches is stop him. And then you have the ball on your side of the field with a minute and a half left.
Sure.
And not saying that, I mean, it's kind of a high probability play for the Rams to go for it on fourth and inches. I understand.
Yeah, not just go for it, but to get it.
Yeah.
I mean,
all you have to do is kind of lean forward a little bit.
Exactly. The QB sneak is unbelievably effective in those situations. I don't care what team you are. It's almost impossible to stop. This is where I felt like Pete got caught up in coach think instead of understanding the flow of the game. Because I thought Angela's email hit this right on the head. As a Seahawks fan, when they trotted out the punter, weren't you excited to see Johnny Hecker?
I was thinking about the potential fake. They've done that before to us.
Well, maybe. Okay, fine. But they were going to punt the football. Like, that was happening. And the play clock was running down. So I don't understand for the life of me why you call timeout there. Let me ask you this, Brandon. If I had told you going into this game that with a 1:05 left, you'd get the ball somewhere around the 20. Russell Wilson has a 1:05 and a timeout, and you're down two. Would you take that?
I would.
Okay.
I would. And,
okay. So if that's the case, which, I mean, me too, when Johnny Hecker comes trotting out on the field, I'm like, yes, this is exactly what I want. I don't want to see the offense come back out. But Pete calls a timeout, gives McVay a second to think about it and go, oh, okay, all we have to do is sneak this and salt the game away. And you're like, well, if we stop them, then you get the ball with more time. Well, the odds of you stopping them are so minute that you saving the 30 seconds doesn't really matter. let Sean, if Sean McVay needs more time to make that decision, let him call the timeout and you save your one remaining timeout.
Yeah.
And if
they were
stop
out of timeouts at that point.
Well, there you go. So, like, to me, that was an abomination. And it was just because Pete got caught up in thinking about the clock rather than thinking about the moment. We talk about situational football all the time. That's a situational football play. Now, am I mad at Pete about that? No, because that's a mistake almost every coach in this league will make at some point or another. Clock management is terrible when it comes to NFL coaching for whatever reason. I don't know what it is, but I think they overthink themselves.
Well, and maybe they don't think about it enough is the problem. Maybe they just think more time is better than a timeout. And in that situation, that because Pete had already called the timeout before they came out to measure it, they decide to come out to measure it. So they say, yeah, do you still want to take your timeout or do you want to keep it? And he says, no, I want to take it. And then that's what gives the Rams extra time to make that decision.
Yeah,
I'm more of the opinion that it's inconsequential because you have to, one, you either have to stop them on the fourth and one, or you have to drive the length of the field to the point to where you can kick a game-winning field goal at the end.
Right.
You
know, but with the way the defense had been playing that whole second half and the way the offense had been playing the whole game, which unit do you want to be making the game-winning plays in that moment?
Either one in that moment can make it.
Oh, Brandon, come on. Out of the two
what
units,
the offense done
out of the two
point?
Units, in which the entire, one, which one had been effective
the
throughout the whole
had
game?
The entire fourth quarter to try and make something happen. They had two drives.
And short of penalties on the last drive, they were doing it. Which unit had been the more effective unit throughout the game? It's a very simple question.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you.
Okay.
But it's one play versus having to, it's one play on defense at that point where you have to make a stop.
That is nearly impossible compared to, we've seen Russell Wilson be the guy since he's come into this league with the most fourth quarter stats. I want it in his hands. I want it in the offense's hands in that particular moment.
Yeah, I wanted them to do something on either of the drives that they had the opportunity in the fourth quarter. So that's why I think that you can't put it all on the timeout.
I don't put it all on that because the defense, you say the offense had two drives there in the fourth quarter to get it done and then didn't. My rebuttal to that would be the defense also had every opportunity to make a stop at some point in the second half, but couldn't, gave up a score on every single drive except for the final drive just because the clock expired.
Right.
All we needed was one stop in the second half. One. And that game is over. We win that game.
And they had it. They had it at that moment. If Shaquille Griffin doesn't get the PI on fourth and two,
that's tough.
If he's going for the ball rather than the back of the receiver,
it was PI. He got there early.
Absolutely. That's what I mean. If he's looking for the ball rather than just looking at the receiver's back and planning to hammer it, I think that he sees that it's going to be outside and. Or he doesn't get a penalty because he's actually going for the ball rather than the getting there just a little bit too early. Or if
he
times it up just a little bit better.
Yeah, that's just a guy gaining experience in this league. I like the idea that this is something I wanted to get to. I like the idea that Shaq and T2 and Trey Flowers and McDougald and Coleman, all those guys out there are relatively either inexperienced or young. And they are learning on the job now. I understand this is Shaq's second year, but he's still a very young player. I love the idea that A, he had done the film study, B, had the recognition, and C, had the aggressiveness to make that play. Now, in the future, with this experience, he will time those things up better. And that's something I look at with this defense. This young secondary, for the most part, held up about as well as you could hope. I've watched this Rams team torch everybody under the sun while the weather has been nice. And this young secondary, without Earl for the very first time, actually played their hearts out. I am so optimistic about the future of the safety tandem of T2 and McDougald, about Trey Flowers and his play in Shaq. The only thing I want to see different, I want to see them up at the line of scrimmage more. I'm tired of all this off coverage. Like, they got killed and torched by playing way too soft throughout the course of this game.
And I think maybe that was part of the game plan, because you didn't see them get torched deep. I want to read an email real quick from Gavin in Sacramento. Says, I think more credit for the Rams' success should be going to McVay than Goff. Almost every throw he made had receivers open by a mile, which speaks to the play calling slash schemes as opposed to an elite quarterback picking us apart. Although this new Rams offense really reminds me of the old greatest show on turf Rams from the early 2000s. Deep routes with seven-step drops and a dynamic rusher as an emergency outlet, but with the added wrinkle of jet sweeps. If memory serves, the downfall of that system, besides Warner leaving, was the inability to deal with pressure. So it will be interesting to see how these guys fare against the Broncos and Bears later this year. Also, all this talk about Pete's timeout costing us the game is truly unfair. In those final 2 minutes, every second counts. And you could not, in good conscience, allow a third of your available time to slip away to save one timeout. And there's no way of knowing if McVay would magically grow a pair in the extra 30 seconds he was allotted by calling it. If people want to blame specific plays, it much more came down to Griffin's PI on fourth quarter in the game and our inability to get back into field goal range following the false start and hold the drive before. In closing, I love the new rushing attack, but hopefully Russell will start to keep a few of those read options to keep the opponents honest. Otherwise, they really don't accomplish what they are designed for. Also, do you feel we should be concerned about the one catch performance by Baldwin? Thanks for the always entertaining show, and go Hawks.
Yeah, go Hawks. We're obviously in agreement with the amount of number of points. There is a valid point that you and Gavin have regarding the timeout, and I get it. That's one way to look at it. I just not the way I would have played it.
And that's why I think it's more of a value judgment, right? Do you value the amount of time on the clock? Because you can throw it down the middle. If you have a minute 39, which they would have, I think, or a minute 35, you still had time to make throws down the middle had they punted, because you can run up and spike it. Or do you value the timeout so you can throw it over the field, throw it down the middle of the field and take a timeout and get up the line rather than
this is where you're missing the point. I value the ball. What's rule number one?
Oh, yeah.
It's all about the ball. So give me the ball back.
Right.
That to me, like, who cares? It's inconsequential how much time you have if you don't have the ball.
Right. Yeah, and maybe Carroll just doesn't think that McVay changes his mind in that particular situation.
I don't think he was even thinking in that term. I just think he was thinking about the clock.
Yeah.
Which is, again, I'm not mad at him. I don't think he's losing it. I don't think anything like that. I just think he outthought himself.
Yeah, I don't think that's the way I'd put it. I don't think he outthought itself. I just don't think that he considered it in that way. I think
as a coach
in those final moments, you go, okay, this is what you're supposed to do, rather than kind of just feeling it out and in terms of the situation.
Yeah, I mean, just every Seahawks fan in the world wanted them to punt the ball there instead of trot the offense out.
And also watching for the fake.
Well, sure. But, I mean, I guess we'll never know.
But there were some things in here that I want to hit on. The idea of the Rams' success, you know, if that should go to McVay rather than Goff. I mean, Goff, every time he got to the back of his drop back, there was a guy running wide open.
Yeah, no, this is very much McVay. And I think Gavin made a good point regarding comps for this offense and going back to the greatest show on turf. And yes, for a season and a half, they were unstoppable for a season and a half.
Yeah.
And then the league caught on. This is going to get exposed at some point. I promise you this. All these little bunch formations and rub routes and all that jazz with these very deep, late developing routes, this will be figured out. And mark my words, when the weather gets cold, this team is going to start losing games because the Rams defense is not as advertised. That back end of their defense is poor. We saw that if you can play physical and bully them around, which is possible, even with Donald Sutton Brockers up front, you can take the starch right out of them. DJ Fluker, Justin Britt, and J.R. Sweezy beat the catfish out of that defensive line. and Chris Carson followed it up running hard behind his pads. This Rams team is a bit of a mirage, and everybody who can't wait to get on one knee, because the one knee approach is best for kissing ass, like, because it puts the booty right in front of your face. Like, all these media members that are just kissing the Rams' ass, this will come back to bite them. What I loved and why I'm so optimistic after this game is watching a scheme that I know will fail in when the weather gets crappy. And then I watch our team with all of the young guys, all of the new pieces that we're putting together and finding our identity now for the third week and knowing by week 10, 11, 12, the national narrative about the Seahawks is going to be we're the hottest team in football. Look, we just took the best team, quote unquote, in football down to the wire and lost by two with a young secondary, with T2 starting for the first time, no Earl Thomas. I mean, there's no KJ Wright, no Michael Kendricks. Like, there's so much coming down the road here with the offense finally figuring it out that I have a really good feeling about this.
There is a lot of room for growth, and I think that's where the optimism is for Seahawks, especially with the young guys on defense. You look at the Pro Football Focus numbers, which I looked at the defense, and you see that Tedrick Thompson is the top graded defender on the Seahawks defense.
No kidding.
He was. Yeah.
Interesting.
In his first full-time game, and a lot of that was due to his coverage ability. I think his ability to, you know, to make that play on third and short with Todd Gurley. I think he was credited pretty well for that. And I think about how crazy it might be if the Seahawks lose Earl Thomas, lose Cam Chancellor, and they still have the best safety tandem in the NFL. Like, the potential is there.
Does that speak to Pete Carroll and the way that he can train up a defensive backfield a little bit?
Yeah, I'm not ready to move on from Pete Carroll.
No, me neither.
It seemed like a couple weeks ago that was an actual consideration. And I think we're going to talk about this more on the bonus show this week, because Tim Moon sent in a long form essay on why Pete Carroll, why he must stay.
Well, yeah, I mean, I can sum it up right quick for you. He's the most successful coach in Seattle Seahawks history, and he's a quarter of a way through a rebuilding year, and it's starting to come together.
Yeah, how about that?
So, yeah, I think one of the biggest bugaboos in this game, I mean, we talk about things that are to blame for losing this game, was missed tackles in the open field. And T2 had a few of them. I'm trying to think of everybody who had some missed tackles, but there were a few.
Yeah,
and that's something that is A, fixable, B, will be fixed as these players get out and actually tackle more throughout the season. With the way the off seasons are structured, you're not allowed to hit. You're not allowed to practice real live tackling. And with all the new rule changes and all that, it's difficult for guys to get in the work to be good at tackling early in the season. We've talked about this over and over again over the last 5-6 years, where at the first 4 or 5 games of the year, the tackling's kind of poor. And then by the end of the year, they don't miss a thing. So it's coming.
Jonathan Stein hit on it as well. He said the timeout at the end of the game didn't lose it for us. Contributed, sure, but it was missed tackles, open receivers. Did I mention missed tackles? The tackling was
catfish
pathetic, and they had 10 missed tackles on the day, 3 of them from Justin Coleman, and that was because Robert Woods was, holy smokes, that guy was the player of the game for the Rams, I think. And Tedrick Thompson, he did have 2 missed tackles in the game. Trey Flowers had 1. Shaquille Griffin had 1. Frank Clark, Shamar Stephen, Barkevious Mingo. So that's your rundown on missed tackles there.
Right. I do believe that will get better.
There were a lot of positives on defense as well. Frank Clark, you mentioned the forced fumble earlier, but then he comes up with the interception on the Rams' next drive.
Second and goal from the 2. Quick snap. Goff has time. Looks to the end zone. Throws. Ball's tipped in the air. Ball is picked off in the end zone. Coming near sideline is Clark. He's out across the 15. Breaks a tackle. Across the 20 to 25. Ball is tipped up in the end zone, and Frank Clark comes away with it. and he looks like the second coming of Jim Brown, running the football all the way out to the 25-yard line.
Yay, the Wyman chuckles are back.
Yes.
Those are great. Look, it's a real shame that the NFL won't allow Frank Clark to wear his cape out on the field, because he is a superhero. He deserves to wear a cape when he's out there on the field. Being hospitalized twice throughout the week, losing 12 pounds, and then on his, I think it was his Instagram, was like, oh no, I'm playing.
Yeah.
And then he comes out there and has a dominant performance.
Ultimately, only finishes with two pressures, but the way he was playing early on in that game, especially, he was the guy that you had to watch for. The fact that he caused the fumble that mm-hmm. led to the only punt in the game for the Rams on the very first drive for them. You said this was going to be a punting battle. We only saw the Rams punter on the field once. And then we saw that turnover that brought a score off the board for the Rams, because they were right down there at the goal line. And, you know, the other person we should mention as part of that pick, Trey Flowers, getting his hand in there in front of Todd Gurley and tipping the ball up in the air. Bobby Wagner gets a hand on it, and it ultimately ends up in the hands of Frank Clark.
Yeah, it, just a tremendous effort by Frank Clark. And I really hope I hear about a Frank Clark extension in the next couple weeks before he hits the open market.
You don't
market.
Want him to hit free agency.
I don't even want to come close to there. Like, I've seen enough. Sign the man. He's young. He's dynamic. He's our best pass rusher by far.
Doing it without Michael Bennett and Cliff Avril, which there was that question, right? Could Cliff Avril mm-hmm. still be the dominant pass rusher on a team without those players on the defensive
Could
line?
Could Frank Clark be a dominant right. pass Could rusher? Yeah, without Cliff Avril or Bennett. And I think this defense and this pass rush will be benefited when Rasheem Green comes back. What exactly is wrong with him?
That it's, ankle.
It's an ankle. Okay. Well, we need him back. Did Deion Jordan even play in this game?
He did. He played, I think he played about half the snaps in this game. So it was a little bit surprising that he didn't show up more.
That's a disappointing performance.
He had 22 snaps in this game and one pressure.
It also sounds like Ken Norton and Pete Carroll are looking at ways to scheme up more pass rush. So we'll see that against the Raiders here and see if they can get after the quarterback a little bit more. But one of the things about the defensive line that we should talk about, or just the defense as a whole, is the way they're holding running backs in check. Todd Gurley, 3.4 yards a carry throughout the game. The great second coming of Walter Payton, Todd Gurley.
Yeah.
And they pretty much bottled him up. They bottled up David Johnson. They bottled up Cohen against the Bears. The only guy that's really gashed him was Lindsey. That was week one. This defense can stop the run. And when you can stop the run and you can run the football, you're going to win a lot of football games, even in this pass-happy era of football.
I mean, the place that they didn't stop Gurley was inside the red zone with three touchdowns. But yeah, 3.5 yards per carry, 22 carries, 77 yards. And he did have some pretty good receiving numbers. His receiving numbers took him over 100 yards. He had 5 targets, 4 receptions, 36 yards. They bought him up about as well as I think you'd say that if he finished that's okay, except for the touchdown numbers, I suppose.
So I really enjoy the idea of where this defense can go, where they are right now, and just knowing that that young secondary is going to do nothing but improve.
The fact that Trey Flowers, I mean, he, looking at the stats for this game, they didn't credit him with any catches.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
2 targets, no receptions is what he was credited with. Bobby Wagner, though, 5 targets, 5 receptions. And a lot of those, I think, were just because it was the middle of the field was so wide open. So I think that's why Bobby Wagner takes a lot of the blame for those open wide receivers over the middle. I don't think he was there necessarily to defend them, because that was just it seemed like that was their plan, was the Seahawks to funnel everything to the middle. Shaquille Griffin, 7 targets, 6 receptions, 107 yards. He you know, clearly had the most balls coming his way in this game. But again, it seemed like he was bringing guys more toward the middle of the field. There were just a couple catches on the outside that you saw. And that's where, I mean, majority of it, Bradley McDougal, 2 targets, 2 receptions for 35 yards. That's not a ton either. So those were kind of your three biggest contributors where the passes went.
Look, the Rams are going to get receptions on people. That's what they do. And we'll go back to the scheme. For now, this scheme is befuddling defenses for a bit here. And there will be a time, because this is exactly how the Rams attacked the Vikings as well. A lot of crossers in slants.
They use that bunch formation.
Yep.
And that they can run the ball out of. And they do pretty well getting, you know, especially if they're running the jet sweep out of that formation, because you have your corners that have to respect the ability of the receivers. And that kind of takes away the edge of the cornerbacks, you know, being able to set the edge.
The corner has to set the edge, just like you're saying. And now you've got them bunched in towards the line of scrimmage. It's much harder to set the edge at that point.
They could fake it. They don't have to hand it off to the receiver. And so that's why the corner there, they have to go with the receiver rather than trying to set the edge in the run. It's going to be, I'm curious to see ultimately how that formation gets figured out, how defenses,
it's gonna
what defenses
happen.
Do to respond to that.
It's going to happen. I promise you it's going to happen.
It'll happen. It's just we were beat by it several times in this game. It's like Madden. In Madden, you find the one play where it seems unstoppable, and Sean McVay has that play right now. He has that formation,
and they do dress it up in different ways, right? With slightly different personnel, and the formation looks slightly different here and there, but it's more or less the same concept what they're trying to get after. And it's interesting because over the years, you know, as the NFL has evolved into more of a passing game and kind of taken on the college style offense, it's been spread them out, get people in space. So here's the thing that Sean McVay has done that is different than the trend that everybody else has been doing. Like that Patriots spread them out, quick twitch, little slot receivers, and just get them in space. He's bringing everybody in and then using the natural picks and everything then to create space outside the numbers.
Right.
So it's interesting.
Well, it is.
We'll see what I'm not a coach in the NFL. I'm not a genius. I'm just a dude who watches football. So do I have the answer for this? No, I haven't given it enough thought and really looked at it, but there's a lot of people out there that are much brighter than me that will figure this out, like Ken Norton Jr. And I cannot wait. I cannot wait to see these guys again.
Yeah.
We're beating them the second time. It's a guarantee. I'm Joe Namath right now. We are going to beat the Rams the second time we play them, as long as Russell Wilson's on the field and Chris Carson's on the field.
Well, I am a little bit curious to see who the Rams face defensively in the coming weeks, you know, between now and the next time that we see them, because, you know, they do have Denver this coming week. I wouldn't expect the San Francisco defense to come up with anything to stop them. The Green Bay defense isn't going to come up with anything to stop them, and New Orleans isn't. So you're really counting on Denver to show you a little something before Ken Norton gets his second crack at them. And then, you know, other defensive coordinators down the road, they play Chicago, they play Philly.
I mean, just remember to the Philly last year, right? And everybody, this offense, it's unstoppable. Like, you can't do anything against it. You know, RPOs and the whole thing. And how's that offense look this year?
They're not unstoppable.
This all has a shelf life, man. This gimmicky crap. So that's one of the things, like, I've been hearing a lot. I mean, everybody praising Andy Reid, praising Sean McVay, praising Nagy.
Daryl Bevel had their turn at getting the praise too when they were running the read option so effectively.
Correct. This gimmicky football crap, it always gets figured out. It always gets figured out by the defense. You know what stands the test of time? And everybody's saying, this is what you have to do. This is what you have to do to be successful. Well, you know what stands the test of time? Running the football. That is a constant that has never changed in this league, and it never will.
And let's talk about that, because that was the success of the Seahawks in this game. And it allowed Russell Wilson to have success in this game, too, up until the fourth quarter, really. Chris Carson, 19 carries, 116 yards, average of 6.1 per carry. Mike Davis, 12 carries, 68 yards. 5.7 average per carry, and to do it against this Rams defensive line, and to see DJ Fluker, you know, especially as the Seahawks got toward the goal line, and seeing DJ Fluker just absolutely pancake Ndamukong Suh on this touchdown run by Davis.
First and goal from the 6. A hand to Davis again. He scored through. He is in. Touchdown, Seahawks. Dave, you are right. This Rams defense hasn't been punched in the mouth like this season. And on this drive, the Seahawks, after the interception by Frank Clark, take advantage from 6 yards out and take the early lead, 6-0.
Look, that's an amazing 1-2 punch between Carson and Mike Davis. And I really like the idea that they're running those two guys instead of scat back Rashad Penny. And it's making a difference, and you've seen it. Are you of the mindset, like all these other articles that have come out, that the Seahawks have wasted a first-round pick on Penny, and this is a disaster, and blah-bitty, blah-blah-blah?
I don't know why you would make a decision about Penny so soon. Like, why? You have Chris Carson. You have Mike Davis. Like, yeah. Okay, sure, 5 weeks into it, it looks as though there would have been other better options to take at that point. But what do we say about the draft?
For an immediate return,
right? Immediate return, yeah.
So everybody's got to look at this through a different lens. I've been saying it since they drafted the guy. He's not ready. He needs a year. let's see what this looks like year two, year three. That's what I'm curious to see. That's what I'll tell you. I was either wrong or right regarding this draft pick. Like, I'm not gonna sit here and crow about it, saying, "Oh, I was right. They shouldn't have picked this guy in the first round." Right now, that's ridiculous.
Right now, you're looking at the best case scenario. You have all your running backs healthy, except for CJ Prosise, who can't make it on the field.
Who?
But you, yeah, right.
Yeah. What was that movie with Samuel L. Jackson and Bruce Willis, where he's just like Samuel L. just is a supervillain who's just always hurt?
Oh yeah, Unbreakable.
Yeah, that's CJ Prosise right there. Yeah.
JD McKissick is going to come back and take his job in a week or two.
Yes.
I mean, I like Prosise, but as a dude.
Oh, absolutely. As a human being. But health is a part of talent, and he doesn't have it.
It's unfortunate.
And I don't think he has Pete, I think it was 2 weeks ago when Prosise came out pregame and was trying to get going and felt something, what was it, in his core, I think, or groin.
You've explained almost every time the Prosise has been out. He's come out before the game and then felt something.
Right.
And then can't go.
I could hear it in Pete's voice, just how exasperated he was. I can never say that word. Is that right?
Exasperated. Right?
Yeah. He was with Penny, and you get the sense that he feels like Prosise. I get the sense from Pete that he doesn't believe in Prosise's ability to tough out anything. He has no toughness to him, no grit.
Well, it's been 3 years. I mean, yeah. You can understand.
Yeah.
But let's talk about a player who does have grit and is completely living up to that contract that he signed early on this season. Receiver Tyler Lockett, big game for him. And as he catches just 3 passes, but for 98 yards, including this touchdown from Russell Wilson.
Vanette now sets in motion on the left side. Here comes the rush. Russell looks. He's going to throw deep.
Hey, I'm Russell Wilson, and I throw a sexy deep ball.
He's got a man. Tyler Lockett is out there. He's got it. Touchdown, Seahawks. A great fake by Russell Wilson and a 39-yard rainbow to Tyler Lockett, who had beaten his man to the end zone, and the Seahawks retake the lead.
Wyman just needs to realize, like, he has to just, if you're going to be excited, just go for it. It almost seems like he's trying to hold back on his excitement, and that's why it comes out the way it does.
Yeah, it feels like somebody in a production meeting somewhere when he was doing practice calls going into the season told him to, like, take it down a few notches or something.
Yeah.
Uncork it. I want to see if Wyman just uncork it. But, look, Russell Wilson uncorked a sexy deep ball to Tyler Lockett there. And it's been written about, and so I'm not going to get into it a ton, But because we're not the geniuses that are bringing this up or like bringing this to light, but play action has been the Seattle Seahawks friend, Russell Wilson's friend, and they had a gaudy over 12 yards per pass attempt stat when it came to throwing off of play action. It is very effective. It plays right into Russell Wilson's hands, and you saw it there on a beautiful deep pass to Tyler.
I kind of agree with the people in the stats community that say you don't necessarily need to be that successful with the run to have the play action be that effective. But yeah, Tyler Lockett absolutely torched Marcus Peters on that touchdown. And I want to go back to something you said earlier about, and also in the email, about Russell Wilson keeping the ball a little bit more. We're not seeing that. And when I see plays like this, where Russell Wilson is down the field blocking, I'm not buying the idea that his hamstring has any kind of issue with him running.
Russell from the shotgun. Hands it off to Davis straight ahead inside. He's got a first down and more. He's out across the 40. He's on the run midfield. He's got blockers. 40, 30, knocked out of bounds. Just shy of the 30-yard line. Mike Davis starts up inside, bounces it outside. John Johnson finally ran him out. DJ Fluker was 20 yards downfield blocking, as were two wide receivers. So was Russell. A big 37-yard gain.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one, I think. I mean, maybe his hamstring is bothering him, but it's not severe by any stretch of the imagination. Like, he could still keep the ball on a read option and run around the corner, I think, and pick up 6-7 yards.
We haven't given David Moore his love in this game. You called out Mike Davis for having a generic name. You also have David Moore. He was
generic.
It's a little bit generic.
You don't know a lot of Moores. Do you know one person with the last name Moore?
There's all kinds of dudes in the NFL with the last name Moore.
It's not Davis Common or Anderson.
Okay. Yeah. But you do have, you talk about Russell Wilson's ability to keep the play alive, and he finds David Moore in the back of the end zone for his first career NFL touchdown.
Ninth play of the drive on second down and goal. Russell play fake, looks, stops, looks again. Now he starts again. Now he rolls right. Still looking to the end zone. Now he goes, touchdown, Seahawks, David Moore. But did he get knocked out of the back of the end zone? The Rams say he stepped out. One official has his hat off. Touchdown. Officials say touchdown. David Moore kept himself alive, and from 3 yards out, he scores his first NFL touchdown, and Russell Wilson kept that play alive.
Well, he reestablished himself in bounds.
I don't think he went out. I think it was the other guy I think it was Vinette who went out.
I thought they both went out.
Oh, well, maybe he did. But if he did go out, he did reestablish himself, because that's what the officials called.
Correct. But
David, I don't know Moore's what it means to reestablish yourself. Like, I don't know what to look for if you just have to get a couple more feet back in bounds to.
Yeah, I think it's both feet. You kind of have to be in bounds for a beat or two. It's definitely a judgment call.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there's a actual rule to this, but I'm not familiar with it.
I mean, there is a rule. It just says you have to reestablish yourself.
Right.
I just don't know what that looks like.
I don't know. Hard to say. But David Moore has been a bit of a revelation. He's starting to live up to that preseason hype that we had heard. And I think we found our top three receivers at this point, right? Doug Baldwin, Tyler Lockett, David Moore. And then you sprinkle in a little Brandon Marshall and Brown. And that's your receiving core.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised we haven't seen more of John Brown out there. But it does feel like it's coming together with those three guys. Doug Baldwin, you know, despite having more snaps than any other receiver, he had 53 snaps, just one catch for 1 yard early on in the first quarter, where Russell Wilson just flips it to him a little bit and he steps out of bounds. You have David Moore, and like I said, the number three guy, 31 snaps, about 50% of the time. And then Brandon Marshall just had 7 snaps. And if you're just mixing him inside the red zone, I think that's fine.
That's totally fine, especially for a veteran receiver, because I'd rather keep him fresh throughout the season.
Yeah.
So that really works well. And one of the emailers had asked earlier, one of the little flockers, about the idea of Doug Baldwin only having one reception and if that should be a cause for concern. And I'd say no. Look, I think a lot of it revolves around the fact the way the Rams were playing, they were trying to take away Doug Baldwin. They know he's the number one option. And I don't see the knee injuries as being completely a problem in as far as it taking away his production on the field. I think it was a focus on what the Rams were trying to take away. And so then Russell went to other places. That's how offense works.
Yeah, and I think Sam Shields, he may even be, now that Aqib Talib went down to injury.
He's their number one corner, in my opinion.
I think he's back into that form that we saw him with in the Packers. Now, hopefully he can stay healthy, because that's always kind of been his issue throughout his career. Mm-hmm. But I do think he is the best corner on that team right now.
Yeah, I believe he is. And
that was the guy on Baldwin this game.
Yeah, I mean, people blaming Peter's injury as the reason for his struggles, they don't understand Marcus Peters' game. He is a total gambler, and you saw him get beat. I believe it was on that David Moore touchdown by looking into the backfield. And if your front four aren't getting home and getting immediate pressure, Marcus Peters is a problem and a liability. That's why the Chiefs were willing to get rid of him.
And you're absolutely right. He got beat the second time on the second David Moore touchdown.
Play fake to him. Russell looks left. Now comes back. He's going to throw deep. David Moore. He's there. Touchdown. Seahawks. Are you kidding me? David Moore. The second coming of Raymond Berry. Two touchdowns in this game for the youngster from 30 yards out.
Beat, back the truck up. Let's hold off the Raymond Berry comparisons here already, all right?
Now, maybe you need to explain who Raymond Berry is, because is this another one of Rabel's 80s references?
Oh, this is a... Raymond Berry was a player for the Colts back with Johnny Unitas. He was the all-time leader in everything receiving at one point.
Okay, so this isn't even an 80s reference. This is like a 60s reference.
Oh, this is the Wayback Machine. How dare you not know who Raymond Berry is? He was a game changer. He was the Randy Moss of his era. He was Jerry Rice of his era.
From 1955 to 1967. But now we all know.
So you're welcome. Thanks, Rabel. But David Moore's playing great. This team put together a performance, even in a loss, that has me looking towards the second half of this schedule, where we play almost exclusively at home. And I'm licking my chops for it, man. We will get at least a wild card spot. Because tell me the team in the NFC other than the Saints. Then the Saints that scare you. Who else scares you that you think is legitimately better than the Seahawks?
Okay, legitimately better is one thing. But one of the things that I am concerned about is how the tiebreakers will play out with the NFC North team. Because I'm assuming at this point the Rams are going to take the division, and you know there's going to be two other division winners. I think the other wild card team comes out of the North.
I think the other wild card comes out of the South.
That's a good point. So you have maybe one wild card team out of the South, one out of the North that's competing for it, and we've already lost one game to the Bears, and I know they're looking good right now. They're kind of up there. The media loves the Bears, along with the Chiefs and the Rams, apparently now.
Mm-hmm.
So
with their easy schedule, they'll win that division.
You think the Bears are winning the division?
I do. The Packers are a mess.
Interesting.
The Packers are a hot mess.
So the Vikings would be the one competing for the wild card. So you just have to, win that game at home against the Vikings. That would be critical.
That tie really hurts the Vikings.
Well, we'll see. Ties can either help or hurt.
It's going to hurt them.
Okay.
We're making the playoffs, man.
I hope so. Because out of the South, you look at New Orleans is probably winning that division, right?
Yeah. And then I think the Panthers are probably one of your wild card teams. Because again, a pretty cupcakey schedule. I mean, this is what they do. They rattle off regular season wins as a mediocre team.
And we play the Panthers, so you have to win that road game.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So you're counting on that.
Yeah.
So those are,
for sure.
Those are
Cam
two
Newton
of the critical games down
the
stretch would be the Panthers and Vikings.
Yes.
And winning the games that you're supposed to win.
Correct. Like this game against the Raiders. We've spent an hour already, Brandon, talking about this Rams game because it was fascinating in a million different ways. How does this translate as they go across the pond, go to Wembley, and take on Chucky and the Oakland Raiders in beast mode?
All right, Adam. Well, going into this game against the Raiders, let's give a little bit more love to our offensive line. And yeah, that does kind of tie back to this game against the Rams. But Hawk Blogger points out the Seahawks offensive line now ranks 7th in the NFL in pass blocking efficiency per Pro Football Focus. Over the last 3 weeks with DJ Fluker in, they rank number 2. And that's considering that they faced Von Miller, Khalil Mack in those first couple weeks. And now since Fluker came in, DeMarcus Lawrence, Aaron Donald, they only gave up 8 pressures against the Rams this past week, not 8 sacks, but 8 pressures. As he points out, this is not Tom Cable's offensive line. Instead, Tom Cable's offensive line on the other side of the football.
Very true. The offensive line is playing lights out. So you mentioned the addition of DJ Fluker into the lineup, but let us not forget the addition of J.R. Sweezy into the lineup. We just need to find a couple more guys that use an abbreviation for their first name, like a 2-letter. Yeah. Yeah. Like maybe if Jermaine Effetti changed it to like, you know, G.I. Effetti, like he'd be better.
It's kind of like G.I. Joe.
Yeah, he'd be an American hero. But the offensive line going up against this Raiders defense, this is where I'm licking my chops looking at this matchup, especially with John Gruden inexplicably trading away Khalil Mack. They're not super strong up front. And basically, the guy that you're most concerned about is Bruce Irvin. And we know all about Bruce.
Yeah, it was weird looking down the list or looking at the last matchup where the Seahawks faced the Raiders, because it was back in 2014, the last time that they played in the regular season.
Yeah.
And of course, that was in the run to the second Super Bowl appearance. Bruce Irvin, Marshawn Lynch, both playing for Seattle. Sebastian Janikowski kicking for the Raiders, and the Seahawks won that game 30-24 in Seattle.
Pretty interesting there. I think the idea of running the football again is very important in this game, just to keep the Raiders offense off the field, because if they do have one unit that is their strength, that it's definitely their offense. And with Marshawn running the ball the way he is, I mean, he's turned back the clock. He looks like old Marshawn. You need to match that physicality. So it's going to be paramount for the Seahawks and Chris Carson and a little Mike Davis sprinkled in too, to impose their will on this game early and often. And I believe they will. And Russell Wilson will have his chances then to pick apart this kind of poor secondary. I feel like this is going to be a game that's like 31-17 Seahawks.
I think the travel, it brings up some questions for me, just not knowing how teams are going to respond. But looking at how the teams are responding, even the week leading up to it, I saw John Gruden it's already in his head leading up to this game. He said, "I'm not a great traveler. I'll be honest with you. I hate it. I'm not good. I'm concerned. I'm more worried about that than our goal line offense right now."
Wow.
So you have the Raiders coach before they're even traveling talking about how worried he is and how terrible of a traveler he was. This is already in the opposing coach's head, where you see Pete Carroll just, you know, saying that this is just something you have to deal with and it'll be fine. And
we've already figured it out. We've done test trips. We've done like the whole thing.
Completely opposite reactions from the two coaches.
I like where Pete's head's at. That's for sure.
But this is going to be the first regular season international series game in franchise history. They did have a couple preseason games back in the late 80s, early 90s. An interesting thing is this is a 10 a.m. Pacific start time. But the other international series games are the 6:30 a.m. Pacific start times. I just thought that was curious that we get the later one. Maybe it has to do with both teams being West Coast teams that they gave a later start. But we won't be the only game on TV to start the day.
A lot of hand-wringing about the travel and the time zone changes and all that nonsense. Again, just sit on your flying recliner in the sky for a couple hours. Go somewhere else. Don't fall asleep when you first get there. Go to bed that night. And then wake up and play football. Like, this isn't rocket science.
I think the big question is how do the Raiders respond to the idea of throwing an interception when they were first and goal at the 1 yard line and deciding to throw the ball rather than run it with Marshawn Lynch and Melvin Ingram picks it off in the end zone. You know, how do the Raiders respond to that adversity moving forward?
They'll be fine. The thing that you need to be concerned about if you're a Seahawks fan coming into this game is Derek Carr throwing the ball with good efficiency. He's completing over 70% of his passes. He's playing the system very well. They do have weapons all over the place. Jordy Nelson has started to break out a little bit. Amari Cooper's a great weapon. And the guy, honestly, that I look at that to me will be the key to this game is Jared Cook, believe it or not. I mean, this is a guy that we've seen in different uniforms over the years, whether that's the Rams or the Packers. But he's playing out of his mind. And we all know that that seamer out with the tight end is a bit of a bugaboo. And I feel like their ability to cover that is going to be the biggest difference in this game in stopping the Raiders offense.
Yeah, I could absolutely see that. Jared Cook's been tearing up the league so far. Despite the fact that they only have one win on the season, Derek Carr, I guess he's playing average. I wouldn't say he's playing bad, I think. And I guess if it comes down to it, though, I look at the way, at just how physical the Seahawks are playing over the last few weeks. I mean, we have, we're starting to see an identity come together, and and they do look like the more physical football team, especially on the offensive line. And I think that's why you're seeing J.R. Sweezy keeping his job at left guard still. And that's okay with me, because it's okay to have depth on the offensive line. I know we're not used to it.
Right.
But there's, it's cool that if a guy goes down, you have guys that you can count on, like Joey Hunt backing up Justin Britt. You have
Ethan Posick at pick a position.
Right.
I mean, these guys can legitimately play. Yeah, the physicality is different.
And people, you even see George Fant out there.
People laughed at me when I said, bringing in Fant as an extra blocker has been effective and creative, and I give him credit for doing it. People made fun of me for being excited about the Sweezy pickup.
I didn't agree with the Sweezy pickup, but I was wrong about that.
And people made fun of me about the DJ Fluker pickup.
Yeah.
People made fun of me about my Rashad Penny take. Look, maybe listen to me more is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, okay.
I may know things.
You might. Or you're really good at guessing. One of the two.
Yeah, I'd rather be lucky than good, dude.
Well, it will be the Seahawks' ability to get pressure with just the front four. And that's really been a struggle for them to this point of the season. You know, Deion Jordan, Rasheem Green being out. Frank Clark can't do it all by himself. He will get his couple plays here and there for sure. But this is a pretty talented offensive line for the Raiders, too. And you do have Marshawn Lynch. It's just that the Seahawks have been able to stop those top backs. And now we've seen it with David Johnson. Now that we're seeing it with Todd Gurley, I think we can expect to see it with Marshawn Lynch, too.
Yeah. Bottle up Marshawn to the best of your ability. Keep them off the field, number one, by just holding the ball and winning time of possession. I think that's going to be a big part of it. Be super cognizant, be super aware of Jared Cook over the middle. Take that option away and then try to make him beat you outside the numbers and with pushing the ball down the field a little bit. Derek Carr will make mistakes. It's been in his DNA since he's gotten to the league. I like the idea of, I think Trey Flowers gets his first pick in this game.
I like that. Maybe going up against their top receiver, too.
Whether that's Cooper or Nelson, take your pick.
I mean, their top receiver has been Jared Cook.
Well, I guess maybe that's why I'm like, say, focus on Jared Cook. Like, let's make sure, that we have an answer for him. And
yeah, you got veteran Jordy Nelson, too.
That's what I keep saying. Nelson or Cooper.
Okay. I thought you said somebody other than Nelson.
No, I thought that's what I said. Maybe I didn't. Maybe I'm an idiot and I don't know what I'm saying.
I don't know. I wasn't listening.
Well, that makes sense. I don't know why anybody would be. This is a marathon.
You know, I was curious about one thing going into this game, because in the past, the Seahawks' record on grass hasn't been very great. So I was curious about the surface that they're playing on this weekend. And I found at the ATCO website, it says the Wembley pitch has a Deso Grassmaster system, which was introduced to overcome early problems with the pitch after the new stadium was opened in 2007. The technology combines synthetic grass with the real Wembley grass and uses a sub-air system, integrated undersoil heating and artificial lighting. So this is, it's not a grass field. It's actually a mix.
This sounds like some unholy mutant hybrid of a field.
It is.
Some cyborg like field to play on. I don't know about this pseudo real fake grass.
Now you're worried? See, there's no... There's no real test case for this.
It just seems like an abomination to the world. Like, yeah. you know what I mean?
Make a decision, like pick grass or pick turf.
I don't know. Like, I just picture like some of those weird science experiments where they like, you know, graft like an ear onto the back of a rat or something, you know, like it's just a bad, it just doesn't seem right.
You see, I think this is a wild card in this game that we need to concern ourselves with.
All I know is I'll be there and I won't be worried about it then.
We are going to be there. And is there anything else that you want to say going into this matchup with the Raiders? You know, this team, looking at Football Outsiders, in terms of DVOA, the Raiders are at number 27 in the league right now, just ahead of Tampa Bay, Detroit, Arizona, San Fran, Buffalo. I mean, there's a lot of questionable teams there. I think DVOA is a good stat to look at. And
I don't like DVOA at all.
You don't like DVOA? It's just compares. Look, the Raiders have played the average.
I don't care. The Raiders have played some decent teams over the course of their beginning part of their schedule and have been in every game. Just haven't had the ability to close yet. So that'll be the number one thing that I'm looking at is fourth quarter performances from two teams who are still trying to learn how to close. Their DVOA stat is far too low for as competitive as they've been.
Yeah, they only lost to the Broncos by a point in Denver in week two. They did get blown out by the Rams in week one.
But let us not forget, through three quarters, they were either up or right in that game.
Oh, for the first half, yeah.
All right,
that's
fine.
True.
First two and a half quarters. Like, yeah. Fine.
They're coming off a game too, a 26-10 loss to the Chargers. The Chargers just haven't seemed all that impressive to me.
Then you're not watching the right football. Their two losses have been against the Chiefs and the Rams.
Okay.
The Chargers are good.
Well, I'm going to reserve judgment on the Chargers.
Get off the box, Brandon. Have an opinion already. Jeez, hey, Louise.
We're 5 weeks in.
Are you going to lease the Chargers so you don't have to make a decision about them?
I will until I decide that I'm buying them.
All right. Throw away your football money that way then. Okay.
Maybe I will.
The Raiders have been competitive. I don't think DVOA. Some of these advanced metrics just are like QBR. Again, is another one I don't like.
I'm less on that one. The DVOA is one that I actually like. And I think it puts the Seahawks more of where my expectations are. As a 2-3 football team, they have them as number 12 overall right now. Kind of in the same neighborhood as Jacksonville, Green Bay, Carolina. And I'm a little surprised to see Houston here, but they've kind of come on these last couple weeks.
Because they're a decent team. As I've been trying to tell you on the pick show, and you keep poo-pooing me.
I know.
Houston's making me look dumb because I fell off the, it's just not good. They'll be okay. But look, those are all teams that I would say that we should absolutely be on par with.
It's just I can't get over the Oakland defense. I guess that's where I look and I see where one unit of ours is completely more dominant than that Oakland unit that gave up 42 points to the Cleveland
Browns. And special teams. Special teams were great against the Rams. Michael Dixon is still a revelation.
We didn't talk about the drop kicks.
Yeah, we don't need to talk about it too much. But, I mean, basically, I like the decision in the sense that Janikowski somehow wasn't getting out of the back of the end zone. I don't know if that was by design or whatever. But they were gashing us on returns early.
Yeah, and the first two returns.
Yeah, and the first drop kick wasn't specifically effective. I mean, I think they ended up around the 35 or something like that, so it wasn't a huge change. But it got better as the game went on. And, I mean, I liked it.
Curious to see how that plays out moving forward. We do have an email from Jerry in Warwick, England. It says, hi to Adam and Brandon, to all the other Hawks fans from the U.S. and from Europe. The game is a sellout, with all tickets going within 5 minutes. For me, like many other, it is a chance to see the Hawks for the first time, having supported them since the 80s. I have listened to you guys for the last 2 years for free, being a cheapskate, but carrying on the good work. I listen to the podcast to cheer me up on the dreary drives and endless queues on British roads, with your cheery banter making the miles soon disappear. I would like to apologize to the rest of the fans in Section 526 for my foghorn of a mouth while cheering on Pete and the boys on Sunday. I believe there will be far more Hawks fans than Raiders there, all having their Field of Dreams moment. If you build it, they will come. All the best. Jerry Palmer. Go Hawks.
See you there, Jerry. And you never apologize for being a loud and proud 12. And I agree with him. I think that the stadium will feel much more like a home game for the Hawks. Just looking at the amount of little flockers that are going to be in the stadium. Like, I mean, just us from this show. We might be the difference in that game. Like, there's a lot of folks going that listen to the pod. It's pretty crazy in all areas of the stadium.
It is. Yeah, it was cool that Hong Kong Hawk Dave Bloomquist put together a little diagram on our London Facebook page for the podcast. And you know what, Jerry, he pointed out that he's been listening for free. That's fine. But you know what else? No new members of the flock this week, Adam.
What?
Yeah. We are sitting at a pretty good number, 312. I think it's a good number to be at gettingtheflock.com. But yeah, we got skunked this week, dude.
That's unacceptable. We're in the middle of the season, working our butts off, putting out three shows a week. Not one. Man.
So I was going to give out the link to the London Facebook page just on the show. But instead, I think I'm going to have to post it at gettingtheflock.com mm-hmm. and a post there just so people have to go to that site to find out where the link is.
There you go. I like it.
Just so to make sure that you're aware that site still exists.
Yeah, absolutely. Because somehow it's been forgotten.
Yeah.
But
and if you're a cheapskate like Jerry, you know, you don't have to sign up. But, you know, that link will be there to the Facebook page and we'll get you added to the group.
I like how you've added a new moniker to throw at people that don't donate to the show. I went with freeloader.
Oh, well,
you're going for cheapskate.
Jerry said cheapskate right in his email.
Okay. So that was
using his words.
All right. Well, it's funny that he called our banter cheery. I would imagine that anything that comes from outside of the UK feels cheery compared to what's going on there, right? Like, isn't that the stereotype of England, is that it's just kind of a dreary, sad place?
Oh, yeah, like Seattle.
Yeah, a little bit. Maybe that's why there are so many UK fans of the Seahawks. I don't know.
So with the game in London coming up, we got an email here from Dave Bloomquist. I think we should listen into this little bit of audio that he sent along to us.
Hello, hello, British Brandon and Argy-Bargy Adam. Unpacking me rucksack and polishing up me accent. Getting ready for me trip to the UK. We're gonna have a banging time, we are. All me 12 mates and me. It'll be a jolly holiday. Them bloody plankers from Oakland are a dog's dinner. I'd be gobsmacked what they even gave us a proper match. Well, tickety-boo, flockers. I'm off to Bedfordshire. I'll be looking forward to having a right chin-wagging with all me birds and geezers over a couple of King Lears. Jubbly wobbly. Oh, and catfish and chips, them manky raiders.
I'm going to go ahead and apologize on behalf of the show for Dave, because I have no idea if that's offensive.
Look, all I know is that his British accent is better than mine. So I'm going to give him a major pat on the back, a major round of applause. All of the slang terms seem to fit. And whether or not it's stereotypical and offensive, I liked it. So I'm in.
Well,
hats off.
I'm looking forward to seeing Dave coming up here as well.
Is he going to be there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool.
One review here says, sleep can wait. Honestly, I don't know why other podcasts don't take notes from your show. Keep up the good work, guys. And to everyone who doesn't say go Hawks at the end of each podcast, do better.
Well, thanks, man. Now I'm feeling a little bit of the love again. That feels nice.
Yeah. And Scott AH 1982 on iTunes says, awesome podcast. I love tuning into the show. Great insight. I do have a question on the Arizona Cardinal game and Earl Thomas. Didn't see any good plays from him. Then he gets injured and gives the bird to the sideline. What's your insight on him? I'm from Spokane, Washington.
Hey there, from Spokane. I'll be spending a week just north of there, not long from now, doing a really big job. But we've kind of covered the Earl stuff.
Yeah.
But I appreciate the review, man.
Yeah, that game against the Cardinals, it was maybe one of his rougher days to go out on. But yeah, we got 2-2 now, and that's who we're rolling with. So good to see a good game from Tedrick. Hopefully that continues against the Raiders. Randy from Fort Jones, California. Hey guys, just wanted to drop a quick note after listening to the last episode where you recap the Cardinal game. I too have been pleasantly surprised at the quality of our play from our young defensive backfield. We will never again have a quote Legion of Boom, but would you dare say we have baby boomers? I know it's corny, but so is Little Flockers, and that stuck. Go Hawks.
Fair. That's absolutely fair. With a, you know, an argument like that, it's difficult for me to not be on board with baby boomers.
I hope that doesn't stick.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it will.
I kind of hope the Little Flockers wouldn't stick either, but...
But it did.
But it did.
Yeah. One day you're going to like it, I promise.
Okay. Well, now that we have patches with it on there, and I'm going to be bringing patches and stickers and stuff to the game this week, too. So if for those of you who did get in the flock or are planning to, I will have envelopes for you just to save me a few bucks on shipping. I'll bring them with me.
Hey, you bet. What's better than having a little Seahawkers podcast swag mailed to you? Having it hand delivered. So that, yeah, I think that's going to be great. It's going to be so much fun to hang out with all y'all over there. We're going to have a meetup, I'm sure. Right, Brandon?
We are. Yeah. And we will have that. We'll post the details on the Facebook page. We are we're going to be at the UK Seahawkers gathering on Saturday night. I know we're going to try and swing by that Seahawks bar that's on the Seahawks.com website that they're featuring. Our hotel is not too far from there, so I think we'll probably be there on Saturday at some point. And then we're planning a pregame meetup location only disclosed on the Facebook page to hit up before the game on Sunday.
Yeah, the Ring of Honor Facebook page.
No, our Seahawkers London page.
Oh, right. Which, if you want that link, you have to go to...
GetInTheFlock.com.
There you go.
Well, we haven't mentioned our Pick'em League leaderboard yet, Adam.
Yeah, that's because I don't care about it anymore.
You're done with that?
I don't know. I do care about it. I just... I'm a little bummed out of my performance so far.
Yeah. Well, D Weezy has the lead, 53 correct guesses so far this year. And you got Jake Off and Jess Trev, who's leading it up. Jess is, she's also number two behind D Weezy on the VIP Flockers leaderboard. She was a correct score away from winning this past week. She loses the tiebreaker with voice in Jared Goff's head. Sam gets the win. He guessed a cumulative score on the Monday night game of 63 points. So Sam gets the tiebreaker and the win.
Well, that's a pretty solid team name. And I think just based on that, you got to get the win, right?
Yeah. Even you know what? That might be Jess's problem. She did not. She just is going with the abbreviated abbreviation rather than a team name.
Yeah, rather than come up with a creative team name. So,
think about that, Jess.
It's just how it goes.
Although she's in third place overall, so she's still doing better than most of us.
Now you're just mocking me.
We're tied for second place overall, rather. So,
right.
Yes. And this week, we are going to... You know what? I don't think I'm going to announce the prize this week because of the fact that you and I are going to London. I say we pick up a souvenir in London to for this week's Pick'em prize.
Done and done. I totally concur with this. It's a great idea.
So even if you're not going to the game, this is your chance to win the league and get a cool prize.
Absolutely.
If you are a VIP flocker at $3 and above, at GetInTheFlock.com.
We'll find out if our picks are any better this week. If you do get in the flock, you do get the bonus shows. And the bonus shows consist of all of our picks from the NFL for the coming week and a little bit of our insight into each and every one of those games. It's entertaining, and the trash talk is fun. So just $1 a month gets you those extra shows.
And we're bringing some Seahawks content into it this week with Tim Moon's Pete Carroll essay.
There you go.
All right. On to do better and better at life, Adam.
My do better is for everybody that's ripping Odell Beckham this last week.
That was really weird. Like, what did he do?
Well, apparently he had some comments regarding Eli and some kind of veiled shots at Pat Shurmur a little bit about offensive play calling and things like that. Now, apparently he had some things that were a little bit of a blow up back in the locker room as well. But again, he did that now inside and kept it within the confines of the team, right?
Right.
Didn't do it out in public. I watched him in the last game calming down Sterling Shepard, who was having a tissy fit, much like Odell used to have. And for people to be mad at Odell for calling out Eli a little bit, watching this Giants-Panthers game, watching this whole season, how in the world are you mad at Odell for calling out Eli a little bit? He's been terrible. The problem in New York is Eli Manning. He's not good. It's over. He's in that last year that Peyton had territory. Like, it's done. And so people coming out and ripping Odell Beckham for just being honest, taking his histrionics down a notch on the sidelines, expressing his frustration to the teammates and everything inside the locker room, keeping it in-house. I think everybody that's getting on him regarding this is full of crap and are a little bit all on their high horse and need to be knocked down a peg. They need to do better.
Yeah, I was curious if it was just the media digging for a story on this.
That's how it felt.
They're mad that they asked him a question about Eli Manning and that he didn't give the right answer from what the media expected.
Again, this is a lot like what we went through this offseason with the national media. Just wanting a story to be true so badly that they'll go out there and try to drum up anything they can to support the narrative that they just want to pitch.
The New York media seems to want friction between Odell and Eli. And so this is a way to generate that.
It definitely feels that way. And they know that Odell causing controversy gets a lot of clicks.
Sure.
And that's really what it all boils down to.
All right. Well, my do better this week is for response to robocalls. I've talked a little bit about this before, my issue with robocalls. And I saw a report out that, that we're going to New York here. The New York Attorney General issued a press release saying that 35 attorneys general throughout the United States, they filed a bipartisan complaint with the FCC saying that these robocalls need to stop. And I saw that and I thought, 35? Mm-hmm. Like, we have more states than 35.
Yeah, how are we not at 50?
Or 51, because District of Columbia joined in on this as well.
Here's me with your facts, logic, and reason.
Here's who joined in. So if I don't call your state, then you know you have a call to make to your attorney general on this.
Yes.
Pennsylvania, Arizona, Arkansas, Connecticut, Delaware, D.C., Florida, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Mississippi, Montana, Nebraska, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, North Dakota, Oklahoma, Oregon, Rhode Island, Tennessee, Utah, Vermont, Virginia, Washington, Wisconsin, and Hawaii. So there's your attorney generals here. California, not on there. What's going on? I know we have some blockers there. That's messed up.
That is messed up.
Texas, not on there.
Yeah, Texas does its own thing. But, you know.
So there you go. Now, this should be unanimous. The robocalls are out of control. So for any states that didn't get on this, do better.
Yeah, for sure, man. There's some derelict on duties attorney generals out there.
What better thing did they have to do that they couldn't just sign on to this? How hard is it?
Attorney general things, apparently. You know, I imagine attorney generals are busy.
There is this election coming up.
Yeah.
So they might be busy.
I guess there's that. But still, do better.
It's about how this affects me. I'm tired of, I like to answer the phone when somebody calls, and allowing it to go to voicemail just is against my nature. And so I struggle with this.
I love that you're starting to get to a point in life to where it's like, this is how it affects me. And this is what it's about. And I like that in you. I like seeing a little bit of selfish pop out. This is good.
Okay.
All right, man. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for the Hubble telescope.
Hooray, now, science.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, this is where I get to nerd out about this stuff and you guys have to listen. So tough break. The Hubble telescope has been in service for a long, long time at this point and has done so with a pretty good record. Once they, you know, fixed the little lens issue that they had, you know, when they shot up a corrective lens in a shuttle and mounted it on there. recently, they've had a couple more failures of gyroscopes on the Hubble Space Telescope. And you need three to really lock in where you're pointing and be able to like hold it there and see things for like a long period of time. The Hubble Space Telescope started out with six. It was down to three. And they just lost another one. Now, NASA's going to try to restart one that had been on the fritz. But, you know, it's not looking great. But they can still operate the thing with just one. And so they're going to take one offline if that doesn't work. Operate just the one. Just won't be quite as stable. But it's already gone 2 or 3 years past the service life that it was supposed to have with the last gyroscope upgrades.
Mm-hmm.
So still producing science, still producing amazing images. Think of all those amazing pictures you've seen from space that Hubble has provided. It's just been outstanding. And for being able to grit it out and limp along with even just one last gyroscope, Hubble, better at life than Skip Bayless.
The inanimate Hubble telescope, better at life than Skip Bayless.
You don't even have to have a beating heart to be better than Skip Bayless. You just have to be.
You just have to be. You have to provide some usefulness to humankind.
Yeah.
It makes total sense.
That's it.
Well, my better at life this week is for the public servants taking care of our public lands on the Olympic Peninsula and protecting us from pea-craved mountain goats, Adam.
I had seen the headline to this story, but had not dove into it.
Yes, Popular Mechanics, the headline saying mountain goats are being airlifted out of national park because they crave human pee. Part of the reason why this is a good thing is that if you're in Olympic National Park taking a hike on the trail, hey, if you've ever been hiking out in the woods, you know what there's not? There's not restrooms. You know, you have to go Correct. Somewhere. Yeah. And it turns out that mountain goats, they aren't even a native species of Olympic National Park. So,
really?
Yeah, they were introduced back in 1920.
Well, who was the genius that did that?
I don't know. We did all kinds of things in the 20s. We stocked ponds with fish that weren't native, yeah, stocked rivers with fish that weren't native. So now, you know, a lot of our resource managers are having to combat that, you know, 100 years later.
Right.
And the number of mountain goats are up over 700 in the park. So
it's a lot of mountain goats.
Yeah. And especially when the problem is that they want the salt and minerals from our urine. And right. so they're hanging out around the trails that we're, you yeah. know, trying to go for a walk. And the last thing that you need coming at you when you're trying to relieve yourself on a trail is a mountain goat while you're in a vulnerable state.
Look, Brandon, I will give you a personal anecdote as to the dangers of mountain goats. So there was a time that my dad and I had climbed up Great Northern Mountain, which is just outside of Glacier Park. It's a 10,000 foot peak. And when you get up towards the peak, it turns into like a razor thin ledge that you walk on up to the peak. Like yeah. it's basically like a sidewalk wide ribbon of rock that you walk. And it's, you know, a couple thousand feet drop down either side.
Yeah.
Hiking up there, my dad, we came across a mountain goat and with two kids.
Ooh.
And she was not excited and was being very aggressive and kind of bluff charging, you know, like kind of and backed us down the mountain, you know, to the point where I took the rifle off my back and was like, am I going to have to pop this thing? It was scary.
Yeah.
So for them to an intent in mind that these mountain goats have like some intent to like get these minerals, like they are scary out there. So this is probably a good thing.
I think it is, and especially when you consider that they're non-native to that area. So they're tagging, blindfolding, and actually airlifting the goats over to the North Cascade side via helicopter and trying to put them in a more hospitable environment for them where they can...
With less pee.
Now, there will be less pee, but there will also be less interaction with people. So that could be good for the goats, too. And for that, yeah. park managers... Better at life than Skip Bayless.
I like it. That was solid, man. Good job by you.
Hey, when I see some talk about pee in a headline, you know I'm clicking.
Tough to resist, no doubt.
You can't even call it clickbait because this is just good information.
It really is. Yeah, it wasn't even made up. This is happening.
All right, Adam. Well, we are hitting the road here to go to London.
Yeah.
Couldn't be more fired up. And this is going to be a fun weekend. Looking forward to seeing the Stringers putting us up on Friday night.
Absolutely.
Making dinner. Absolutely. Cooking breakfast is the plan. And then hanging out with all our UK Seahawkers. And this is going to be a blast.
It's going to be an absolute ball. I cannot wait. Everybody, yeah, show up, man. If you're around, like, show up. I want to see you. I know Brandon does too. Let's blow this thing out.
And let's make this feel like a home game environment for the Seahawks. Everybody complains about how windy. Oh, there's, you know, so many fans of all these different teams. Let's get them on our side and let's take down these Oakland Raiders. And let's, you know, meet up, get fired up before the game. Barrel Boy and Banker Pub is the Seahawks bar in London. We'll be there at some point. And Adam, with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Hey, look, a wireless caller from Sealy Lake, Montana.
Oh, really? Is your warranty expired?
Probably. Or it's a limited enrollment period for healthcare.
Oh, right.